Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Survivor LFC Roundtable Podcast. I make up the name every time we do this, but I'm very happy to be here. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I'm with the LFC minus Melissa plus Lita, who is subbing in for Melissa, who has a very swamped schedule at the moment. So, Lita, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm really sad Melissa isn't here, but I feel like this is like an acceptable replacement because an argument could be made that I'm like the off-brand Melissa. I feel like I'm really like the Kirkland Zone version of Melissa. So maybe some people listening won't even notice.
Oh, well, hopefully. Hopefully I didn't give it away. I wonder how long we could have gone without it. And then also here with me, as always, is Brent Walgamont. How are you doing, Brent?
And Brent Wagamont does not have a swamp schedule. Brent Wagamont doesn't even have a job right now. Actually, I take that back. I do have a job. I'm just sort of waiting for my gaming license to come in. As many of you who follow me know, I am a dealer by trade, a table games dealer, but we moved from Louisville to closer to Cincinnati. And so I'm at a new casino now. And since I'm under Ohio gaming control, I have to get a new license. And that's what I'm waiting on. So until then, Taryn, I'm all yours.
Yeah, well, I've gambled for the first time, like in an actual casino. I was in Reno for the Run It Up Reno thing, and I played blackjack and some craps, and I actually interacted with some dealers for the first time. And I hope that you're a nice dealer and not a mean dealer.
Yeah, there's a lot of dealers who shouldn't be dealing anymore, really.
Pretty much. I mean, it was really the floor managers. They were the meanest.
Really? Yeah. Usually they're okay. Yeah. Cause they don't have to deal with the riffraff like on a minute by minute basis. Usually, you know, they're behind the scenes and whatever happens that screws up, they can come in and play the savior. They can make it right. You know? So if they're having a bad day, they must be really, really bad off.
It was because we were playing blackjack, and then they did the little thing where they checked to see if it's 21, and it showed that it wasn't blackjack. And then we played the hand, and then it was blackjack.
Oh, I've had that happen, yes.
And then like two of them came by and were just like, ah, doesn't matter. You guys lose anyway. Like they were really enjoying it because they didn't like us very much.
Wow.
But all right. Anyway, we're here to talk.
Poker.
You weren't tipping, were you? That was it. You weren't tipping. I know it.
I didn't even know the tipping was a thing. Look,
I
was taught by Kevin Martin, Adam Klein, and Rob Sesternino. So blame them.
I'll have words
for
with them.
My poor etiquette. So we are here to talk Survivor. We had a big double episode, episodes 10 and 11, although that might be controversial, over the last week. Very, very good episode. So I was like, we definitely have to get together to talk about these episodes. Very excited to talk Survivor. I feel like this season has really picked up since we last talked. Do you agree, Lita?
Yeah.
You didn't talk last time, but still.
Yeah, since the last time we talked on this podcast about Survivor. Yeah, certainly since the last time I talked about Survivor, which was like around the merge. That was on Dom and Colin, though. You didn't miss anything. I think that I was having issues just finding someone to root for. And I think that that's still an issue. But as the numbers get down, that'll naturally become less of an issue. Because usually at top seven, I only like one or two people. So like this is now not unusual, whereas when there's like 14 people left and I only like one or two people, that's a problem. So there's that sort of naturally evening out. And I also just think like great decision to make this a double boot. Like if we had to sit through a JP boot, which even though that episode was more exciting than it could have been, and then wait a whole other week for someone who matters to go home, I think that would have been very challenging. But one thing that I love about this spot in the final seven and why it's really picked up is because it's so hard to figure out who the goats are. Like there's not really a scenario where you can see one person being at the end with two other people and just being like, well, if that happens, that person's going to sweep. There really are not two very clear goats. There are cases to be made for almost everyone.
That is such a good point. Honestly, I thought maybe I was the only one having trouble deciding who to root for. Because, you know, I think that Devin is very likable, but I felt like there were elements, especially of the second episode, that made Devin come off as a little bit cocky and a little bit like he knows it all. And that this was all his plan that he came up with. And, I also thought that Ashley came off a little bit like, oh, now she's going to play the game and she has all sorts of evil plans to come up with. And, Also, Chrissy and Ryan, to me, have been presented in a relatively good light coming into these episodes. And even coming out of them, I was sort of taking Chrissy's side after the first blindside because they would not talk to her. And I saw some people on Twitter saying, you know, how entitled is Chrissy that, you know, she expects people to come up to her. And I'm like, well, you know, she's probably going to be on the jury. And if you're one of somebody who wants to win, there's no reason to not tell these people this is when the plan came together. I mean, sure, I know they wanted to keep Ben out of it, but keep Ben out of it and just say, you know, this is when the plan came together. I was really with her on that point. So I take Lita's point that I don't know who to root for anymore because I feel like it's a little bit all over the place. The one person who I have loved in the past few episodes and even before this double boot episode was Lauren. And I thought, well, maybe I'm kind of alone in that. And then after these two episodes, I was like, yes, bitch, I'm here for you. I am so here for you. Please win this game.
Yes. Well, something that Lita mentioned, like JP going home in that first part of the 10-11 double episode, it was very shocking to me because, like, I was thinking, usually you get a double episode because the first boot is really boring. Who's the most boring boot? JP. He's one of the three people that might go home, so it makes sense that he would leave, but I don't understand the logic behind taking JP out, so it was hard for me to, like it can't be JP. Logically, it makes sense that it's JP based on like the structure of the episodes, but like what would be the reasoning? Why not just take out Chrissy or Ryan? Ultimately, I think they went for JP because they were worried that maybe Ryan might play his idol on himself or Chrissy. That's the only thing I can think of. But it was a very weird situation. Brent, do you have any ideas on this?
I just want to tell you really quickly that I accidentally got, you know, I didn't watch these episodes in real time. I can't remember. I was during orientation with my new job. And I had all sorts of things I had to do. So I didn't watch them in real time. I watched them the next day with my parents. I went onto Google to search for something. And Google has these things where they prompt you about stories that you've read in the past. And it said, you know, Joe Mina, this is what I did wrong. And I'm like, shit. Like, I just got spoiled on a boot. But I didn't know which boot it was. Okay. So then I told Mom, I'm like, Mom, I just got spoiled on a boot. And she's like, who was it? I said, Joe. She's like, I'm like, is it the first or the second boot? She said, second. And I'm like, okay. So then as we're watching the first episode and I can sort of see where things are going, I'm literally telling my mom, I'm like, well, Ryan's going home. I mean, like this is Ryan's going home. I understand why. Like, and they've even had confessionals of him saying a little presumptuous things like, you know, like I don't see anybody splitting from the seven. And you know what I mean? Are you with me on this? Yeah. I thought for sure Ryan's going home. And then my mom is just sitting there like a proud peacock, you know, like the cat that swallowed the canary. And then JP comes up and I'm like, holy shit, how did that happen? Like, did he even have a confessional this entire episode? And then I went back and, of course, Twitter told me, no, he did not have a confessional the entire episode. And it was a shock to me. So I'm with you, Taryn. I didn't understand the logic either.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, actually, because it's sort of like over the course of these two episodes, as you guys were talking about, it felt like the people that were a little more under the radar up to this point were JP, Ashley, and maybe you could say Lauren, maybe you could even say Mike to some extent. But Lauren is like, she had a bit of content in the beginning, which was why I picked her in my draft. And then she got a little bit of content when she got the double vote. But it wasn't until this double episode that she really came to the forefront.
I think Dennis, is in that category of people who are a little under the radar who came to the forefront.
I think because I've been seeing Devin ever since the merge. Basically, like when we were in New York, there were a lot of people that were like, wow, Devin came out of nowhere. Now I'm starting to think Devin is my winner pick. That's where I feel like he started his rise. But this was definitely a huge episode for him as well. But like, so point taken, like I feel like all of the people that were under the radar, that were under edited characters, really just came to the forefront. And then the one person that was left, JP, was taken out. And so now we have a full cast of characters. And I think we have a good idea of how each of them view the game and how each of them want to progress forward in the game. And I think that's really, really great when you're looking at, when you're watching, because it's a bunch of individuals and they all have their own plans and we know what all those plans are. It feels developed in a way that Survivor doesn't always feel, especially when we look at like Game Changers or something like that, when things are just kind of going all over the place and you never really know why. This feels a lot more akin to Australian Survivor to me, where I actually do feel like I know these people and I know what they're going to do. So that's what makes me really excited, Brent.
Yeah. By the way, Alita, I will totally co-sign the Devin. I feel like has been more under the radar. Now, I and this is what I mean by that. I feel like for super fans like ourselves who parse the editing and are looking at things like that, then Devin, you know, came to the forefront. And we're like, oh, we see it. But from people like my mom's point of view, who just kind of watch the show and appreciate it for what it is, I feel like she would say that Devin is definitely under the radar. I wager she may not even remember his name coming into the episode on Wednesday night. So that's where I think Lita and I are coming from in saying that Devin was a little bit more under the radar for like the general fans as opposed to the super fans. I also do take your point, Taryn, about having appreciation for the players that are left in the game. I mean, if you told me going into that episode, okay, the person who's going to get eliminated is JP, and you're going to be left with this bounty of characters who are all gamers and are really, really playing hard, I would have been thrilled. And then the way it came about was a little bit wonky, but nevertheless, they gave me what I wanted, Lita. And so, you know, I'm here for it.
What's interesting too is that like this alliance that came together of Lauren, Ben, Devin, and Ashley, it felt like, well, like we are the outcasts, we're kind of the underdogs right now, we're all gonna band together and take over the game.
Yes.
And the edit treated them like that too, like the edit had been treating them like underdog, like they were underdogs in the edit as well, where they hadn't gotten a lot of content up until that point. So they really, like, the edit really mimicked what happened in real life in a meta way, which I think really, really worked, because I feel like this is one of the more popular groups of people that we've ever seen on Survivor in terms of just like coming together and everyone rooting for them, because I don't think anybody wants this alliance to fail, Alita.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, interesting as well.
I think some people in this room might disagree with you. I am not rooting for this alliance at all, but I think that it's exciting, and I do like the way that that's a really good point about the edit sort of making them the main characters as they become sort of the dominant strategists. I think it's also just a little bit frustrating, and one of the reasons that this season has been not my favorite so far, is that they do this amazing stuff with the editing, making it so balanced. We know who everybody is, but often it's at the cost of like knowing what happened. Like, I feel like even with the JP boot, which I cared less about because who cares why JP went home? Like, he was in the minority alliance, probably because he didn't have an idol, like we can infer. But even that, I would like to know why exactly. I just want to hear from someone. Why did you pick JP? Why was it, you know, XYZ? Why was it Jessica? Like, going back that far, like, we don't get clear, explicit confessionals being like, it's either this person because of this or this person because of this. And I feel like we need that to kind of guide us going into tribal council. Otherwise, it's just like, oh, Desi? Okay, sure. Why? I have no idea. So I wish that they would do a little bit better of a job of sort of explaining this. But I do understand that they're dedicating more time to different people getting character moments.
I have a theory. I think that David Bloomberg bribed CBS and got them to stop showing why somebody lost the game so that people would have to listen to his podcast, Why Blank Lost. Otherwise, he does the investigation for you. He figures it out. He goes into
ironically co-hosted by Jessica.
Exactly.
I know, right?
I heard that that Mike in the episode previous to this double episode, when he was making a big scene and playing his idol at Tribal, had actually pulled out his idol as well as a fake idol and put the fake idol on Joe. And like, there was a bunch of shenanigans happening that we didn't even see, which is just insane to me. I do think it's echoing Australian Survivor for me. It's kind of like a hollow imitation of it, but that's still better than like a Game Changers kind of thing for me, where at least I know the characters. At least I have a good sense of like what their motivation is. Even if I'm not getting the full story, I'm kind of used to that with US Survivor in particular. I'm mostly okay with it. And I really do like these characters.
Yeah, I do too. I really do like all of them. There's nobody who I really dislike. And I think maybe even that is maybe a bit of an indictment of the show, because I like my villains. You know, I like to know who I'm supposed to root against. I'm that kind of fan who I like to be spoon fed. Okay, this is the person you're supposed to hate. And I know that you dislike that, Taryn. I get that. But I feel like that, you know, for those of us who are, you know, not quite as astute and who just maybe appreciate the drama of it all, I like a little bit more straightforward editing. So I take Lita's point on the editing issue. The one thing I wanted to acknowledge is the fact that Lauren had it right. Listening to JP in his exit interview talk about Chrissy and Ryan, he was going to the final three with Chrissy and Ryan. I mean, they were set. So they must have done a really terrible job at letting people know we're the final three. And that also must have been why. And I wish we would have gotten some sort of confessional about this. You know, we've heard about the vaunted Chrissy and Ben relationship all the way back to like episode two. And, you know, he's turned on her for seemingly no reason. And, you know, obviously there was a reason. Obviously those three were doing a bad job of not letting people know that they were planning on going to the final three with each other. But I would have liked to have gotten a little bit from Ben. Like, you know, I mean, that had to have been a hard decision for him to turn his back on Chrissy and basically put her on the chopping block. I mean, she could have gone home in this past episode if she didn't win immunity. They were at least talking about it anyway. So
yeah, and like to that point, what about Ashley and JP, who the last we saw of them, they were like basically in a showmance, and we don't even understand from, we don't get anything from Ashley right. about how she feels about voting for JP. Right. Like it's two less interesting characters than Ben and Chrissy, but it's still like, that was the only thing we knew about JP for the whole pre-merge, was that like he and Ashley, and then it's just gone. So these really early set up relationships just kind of like disappear, and we don't know why or when.
I think there's a whole power couple love triangle storyline that we missed out on, that like when Ashley goes to the split up tribe with Devin, they've got a relationship going, and then she forgets all about JP. Then they reunite, and Devin and JP, they've just got this weird chemistry together now, and it's like awkward. They're both fighting over Ashley for like power couple status, where she talks about liking them, but not really. They were just like, let's just leave this on the cutting room floor.
Fan fiction.
Yeah.
No, this is totally true. I'm telling you guys. But yeah, with Chrissy and Ryan, it really felt to me like very much a case of they just got comfortable. And we see this all the time in Big Brother too, where it's like, I think that they got into the game, Ryan in particular, he was in complete control of the Hustlers tribe. He was immediately able to win people over, control what happened. Then he made it onto the Swapped tribe. He met up with Chrissy. He was able to win her over. He was able to control what happened there. There was a bit of a slip up, but it didn't matter because he still controlled everything. Chrissy as well. She was in a weaker position on her original tribe, but she was able to get power, swap over, easily get Ryan, completely control that tribe. And then they make it to the merge and they control the merge vote on forward. They never really faced much adversity in the game. And I feel like they just were like, yeah, this is easy. This game is just easy. Everything's playing out the way it's supposed to. Now I just need to coast to the end. And they just kind of like, they took their hands off the wheel. And as soon as they did, Lauren came in, grabbed that wheel and said, this is my game. Lauren, who I believe when they say like they were really were probably going to take Lauren to the end. And I think they saw her as a goat. And I think they were so comfortable with the fact that they didn't think that she was playing the game, that they felt like, yeah, we're just going to take Lauren to the final three with us. And we don't even have to tell her. We're just going to drag her along and that'll be totally fine. And Lauren was just like, I don't think so. I think I'm going to control my own fate. Thank you very much. Very impressed with Lauren's move there. Brent, what did you think of Lauren taking control like that?
Really kind of amazed, I have to tell you. When she won the reward and then picked these people who would later become her core alliance, I was like, I just don't remember anyone really having done that before, where, you know, you're part of a bigger alliance and you want to make a move in the game. And so in front of everybody, in front of Jeff Probst and God, you decide to say, okay, I'm going to take you, you, and you. Of course, she didn't know it was going to be three people. I mean, Jeff did the old, you know, you can pick one person and then pick another thing. Actually, I need to go back to the order. I'm sure somebody can tell us of who she picked when. Wasn't Ben the last person she selected? I wonder if somebody can.
I think Devin was last.
Ashley was first, though. I want to say yeah. Ashley was first. Yeah, so that seems to be her ride or die right there is Ashley. I thought it was just amazing the way that she brought it all together, how Ryan and Chrissy never suspected a thing. I would like to hear more from Ben about, you know, how does Ben feel like he's going to get to the final three? Because final four is great. They're all like, we're going to the final four together. Well, whoopee. I mean, what do you get for fourth place? I mean, you know, it sure isn't what you get for getting into the final three. And I want to know what he thinks his path is at this point, because I mean, honey, one episode goes by. They can't even make it one episode and they're already talking about getting Ben out. So I just don't know how he gets to the end, but I am really pleased with Lauren and her ability to bring this somewhat ragtag group of people. And I know that Ashley and Devin have a relationship. I get that. But pulling Ben over away from Chrissy, I thought was just great. Obviously, Ben and Lauren have had a relationship. We've seen that in the past when they were at the old Yawa. And was it Rob? Not to throw shade on Rob, but I think he was sort of poo-pooing the whole like Lauren and Ben relationship. But it was something that really bore fruit in this episode, and so good for her.
I think Rob might have been the one that was saying, like, yeah, I feel
Steven.
Like Ben and Lauren are getting together.
Okay, sorry, Rob.
Steven was like, nah.
I'll throw shade on Steven. Okay, cool.
But yeah, I feel like for Ben, I think what Ben is thinking is, man, I really won Ryan. I really won Devin over when I told him about Ryan's idol. That's great for me. And I've always had this close relationship with Lauren. We discussed the double vote thing together. So in this thing of four, I am connected. I am Devin's number one. I am Lauren's number one. This is great. I'm in a great spot. I think he's misreading that. I think that's his thought process. And I think that's why he feels comfortable. Lita, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he's got an idol. He knows that, like, even if something goes wrong, that, well, he thinks that even if something goes wrong, he can get to the four. And I mean, all of this playing the double agent and pretending to still be with Ryan and Chrissy, maybe he thinks that he can just maintain that relationship as well. So if he needs to jump back to them eventually, then he can, especially since those two as a pair are more on the bottom now. Maybe he thinks that he still has that as an option, so he has somewhere to go. I don't think that's the case. I think it's a terrible look for him that both sides, like all the power players on both sides of the alliances, are looking at him as like, yeah, he's got to go at seven. So even with his idol, I don't really see him as, you know, someone who's going to win out to the end. And also, I don't even see him as someone who would necessarily win if he got to the end. I think that there are a lot of people he could be up against that it would be a very tough jury vote for Ben.
Yeah, I also agree with that. I wanted to bring up really quickly, how stupid was it? Because Joe talked about this in his exit interview, and I was talking to my mom about this as the episode was airing. I have two questions. One, how did they decide to let Ben be the double agent? I mean, of all people, you let him be the double agent, and he still has ties to Chrissy and Ryan. I feel like that's a really bad move on their part. Steven even brought it up in the know-it-alls, how, you know, like, usually you don't want to let somebody do that because you're afraid that they really are double dealing and they are really are sleeping with the enemy. And two, going into next week's episode, are Lauren, Ashley, and Devin going to tell the truth? Are they going to let Chrissy and Ryan know and Mike that Ben was in on it the whole time? Does Ben want them to know that he was in on it the whole time? Is Ben going to go to Chrissy and say, look, I was in on that. I'm here to tell you, but I'm here now if he feels like he needs to make a move and flip back to the other side, because I don't feel good about him in this foursome with Lauren, Ashley, and Devin. And I really do feel like he is misreading the situation. He feels like he's number one with two of these people, but in reality, I don't feel like he's number one with either one of them. I feel like Lauren's number one is Ashley, and ironically, Devin's number one is Ashley, I feel like. So Ashley, to me, is the person who's probably has the most power out of everybody, and I don't feel like she's likely to be voted off anytime soon. I have those questions about this episode mainly, and I still think I would be like, I was really taken by Steven during the know-it-all saying, well, you know, Ben's your winner, or I think it's very highly that Ben's going to win the game. Number one, how the hell is he going to get there? Number two, even if he gets there, I agree with Lita. I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk, given the people who are on the jury, that they would necessarily vote for him.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question, like this double agent plan that Devin comes up with. And I will quickly say, and we'll get back to it, that I loved watching Devin in these two episodes. Thought that it was so fun to watch his plans play out, because we don't usually get to see this kind of thing on Survivor. I don't think it's the best thing for him or Ben, to be honest. But I loved watching it. I thought it really made for great TV. But in terms of how this works out for Ben, because I've seen some people saying this is a great move for Ben. This is great for Ben. Why are they letting Ben do this? Because now he's in with both sides. But the way I saw it was, this is not good for Ben. This is very bad for Ben, because when Ryan and Chrissy find out that Ben has been double dealing, or that he double dealed, that's going to hurt him. I think when it comes to jury questioning, that's going to hurt a lot more than if he had just come clean. And even in the game right now, he may be tied to them, but the second the other side feels threatened, they can just out him and say, no, look, Ben knew the whole time. It was Ben's idea. And there, the light switch is going to go off, and they're going to go, oh my God, Ben is the devil. How can we trust a single thing he says? I really feel like this was a bad spot for Ben to be put in. It really, really worked out for that alliance of four. I thought it was a masterstroke in terms of really just ensuring that it got what they needed to be done. But for the people that were involved with Ben and a little bit with Devin for orchestrating it, I think it could hurt them in the end, and it can hurt them in the game. So that was my thought. What do you think, Lita?
Yeah, I think when you need that level of gameplay and long-term potential damage to your game to get out JP, then that's not really a sustainable strategic alliance that's going on there. I mean, I love to watch Devin as much as the next person. Maybe not his plans, but I felt like this was in both maybe not in the first part of the episode. I think that the Ben thing was really the only thing that could hurt anyone in that alliance, and the main target there is going to be Ben. But I thought in the second episode, this plan was way too unnecessarily complicated. This had so much potential for someone to slip up and blow up. And I feel like Devin, when in the first part he was saying, oh, Chrissy and Ryan, they taste power and they've gotten so cocky. Then in the second episode, he's doing the exact same thing where right. He gets in control, like truly in control for the first time in the game. And he's just like wanting to do all of these like crazy plans and schemes with his people. And it's just not necessary and also very dangerous.
Yeah, I'm with you, Lita. Like, Taryn, I have to disagree. I didn't really enjoy it. And I don't know. I feel like he was, I guess I'm here to watch games, and I like people playing Survivor, and I'm here to watch them play hard. I guess I felt like he was being a little sneaky for seemingly no reason. Like, yes, it was a sneaky plan, but can someone please remind me the reason why they had to do this in the first place? Was there a valid reason for keeping everybody in the dark about the fact that Ben was with them?
I think there's a very valid reason. I don't like, in terms of was it necessary? The answer is probably not, I think. But in terms of like ensuring that everything is going to go smoothly, it's almost the opposite of Chrissy and Ryan, where they got like, they just took their hands off the wheel. This was Devin kind of like, writing a computer program to make sure that there's no possible way that the steering wheel will mess up in any way. What it does is you know exactly what Ryan and Chrissy are doing with Ben on the, supposedly on their side. Ben ensures that Ryan plays his idol. It also prevents Joe and Mike from figuring out what's going on. It keeps them very comfortable, because instead of being included in on a plan of four people to two, it's three people to two. And they're very okay with that when they don't have any other options. So when Ryan comes to Mike, he's like, why would I accept any offer you have? I've got a great thing going.
We need to talk about him, but I want to talk about this other thing first. Like, I feel like that that's a lot of nothing to me, at least the first two parts, because I feel like that after the blindside happens and Chrissy and Ryan realize that they're pretty much by themselves, he's going to play his idol anyway. I mean, he's still going to play his idol. Ben didn't do a damn thing to make sure that Ryan was going to play his idol. I thought it was ridiculous that the show showed him saying, oh, I don't know, you better play it tonight. I mean, like, as if he has something to do with that. Ryan knows him and Chrissy are on the bottom. Supposedly he thinks it's with him and Ben, but it doesn't matter if it was with the three of them or the two of them. He was always, always, always playing his idol at this point, especially when everybody in the game knew he had one. But then, I still want to talk about Mike.
Well, I think sort of the beauty of it is that it's four people taking over a game of nine, and they take one person out from the other side by pulling in the two outcasts. But if they know that it's a solid group of four that it's just done that, that's just taken over the game, then those two can flip back over. They can try to play an idol on the person you're voting for, because you can't split votes when it's 4-4. And they could even go to rocks if they wanted to. Like, there are a lot of ways that things could go wrong. Probably wouldn't have, but what happened is they pitted the two people that weren't in their four against each other, so that there was no possible way that anything would backfire. So it's very, very micromanaging. And what I thought of when I watched this play out was like, this is a brilliant move for Devin to make for Ashley and Lauren, because they are the ones that benefit by far the most from it, because they don't have to get their hands dirty and they benefit from the nothing can go wrong. And in the meantime, they see what a danger Ben is. They see what a danger Devin is. And Devin and Ben are also probably pissing people off that are going to the jury. Once they find out this plan, they're going to be a little like, man, was that necessary? That didn't feel necessary.
Although Lauren does get her hands just a little bit dirty, because she's lying about her using the extra vote,
right?
Which, yes, like, is directly coming from her. So the only person, so they told Joe and Mike that she was going to use her extra vote, correct?
Right.
And she didn't. So the only person here who's still left that thinks that the extra vote was played and might have a rude awakening is Mike, if he is somehow bounced out by this extra vote ultimately. And like, that might be something that he views as like just like a mean lie. But it's not super risky, but she was involved in that deception more so than Ashley was. But I do agree that it's much better.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I think that needs to happen, Ben needs to come clean right away. I mean, the sooner he comes clean to Chrissy and Ryan and says, this is what happened, I was in on it the whole time, and, you know, and lets them get over that, because that's going to take a while. And he even needs, I think he needs it to come up in tribal council in front of the jury, so that the people who got blindsided by that, JP and Joe, who thought that he was with them, they have some time now to digest the fact that, you know, oh, my God, you betrayed me. Oh, my God. You know, and get used to the idea. You know, we talked about this on Big Brother, Taryn. Is it, you know, are you going to tell them that you betrayed them now? Are they going to figure it out at the end and have no time to get over it? This is when, you know, obviously Paul was not telling the people the truth in his goodbye messages. I always felt like he should tell them right then. He should tell them right then. Yes, I screwed you over. Yes, I was playing the game hard. You know, see you later. And then let them get over it and then cast their vote for him at the end. But instead, he lied right to their face, made them feel like fools, and then lost the game because of that. Spoiler alert for Big Brother 19. But I really do feel like that more than anything, Ben just needs to get it out in the open, let people talk about it. Yeah, I was in on the plan, but you know what? I'm coming home. I'm with you now. Chrissy and Ryan and Mike, you know, let's do something together. Let's take out one cog in the other side. And who knows, based on the previews for next week, might happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's easily his move, especially considering knowing what he doesn't know, which is that Ashley and Lauren in particular were really high on the idea of stabbing him in the back even this week. Right. I think the obvious move for Ben at this point is flip back over, because not only will it probably alleviate a lot of the pain that Chrissy and Ryan are going to feel that you betrayed them, because if it's like, look, I'm sorry, I did play you, but now I'm on your side for real because I have no one else, they were going to stab me in the back, whatever it is. It's a lot easier to swallow when it's like, okay, now the pain is over and you're going to like help relieve it. Okay, that's all right. We'll deal with this later. Now that you're helping me, I'm okay with it. And I completely agree that it needs to talk about it at tribal, because the people that were screwed over, as you mentioned, JP, they need to hear it from him. They should not be hearing like, oh no, you thought Ben was your friend. He is a liar. He's a snake. He hated you. He never wanted you in. Like, that would be the worst case scenario for him. He needs to be able to articulate why he did it. And I feel like that might be where he falters, because I think Devin knows the intricacies of why this move was good, but I think Ben was just kind of like, sure, I'll play double agent, that sounds cool. And if he's not able to articulate like the benefits, like what I explained earlier, then I feel like that's really gonna fall flat to Chrissy and Ryan. What was the point? Why did you do that? Well, Devin came up with the plan. It was Devin's idea. And that's, if he tries to push it on Devin, I feel like it's just going to backfire. It's going to go onto him and they're just going to be so mad. And I feel like he was a contender to win if he made it to the end. And I do think that this move in particular could be a reason why he has trouble winning if he gets to the end, which could be interesting if we do see it play out, because I do think he's getting a good edit. I'll stick with Steven in terms of that. I think that Ben has been receiving a very good edit up until this point. No matter what he's doing in terms of mistakes, in terms of how the tribe is viewing him, we're still getting these these family confessionals. I'm doing this for my wife. She found this idol for me. It does feel like he is an endgame character. But Brent, you're right. I'm not sure how it happens. I'm not sure how he gets there. And I'll be interested to find out if that is the case, how he does get there, because maybe it is flipping back and forth. And I think that could be interesting too. Alita, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've basically said it all. Even if he gets to the final tribal council, maybe that's where he's planning on coming clean. But I don't necessarily see him as like the kind of orator even that can pull it off. I sort of see Devin as someone who is playing up not being good at talking at tribal council, but can really like put together an argument and build a case. I see him as sort of a super fan that knows how to play it at Final Tribal. So I think if those two end up at Final Tribal together, which I'm not really sure how likely that is, but that's going to be a disaster for Ben. And I think that there are a couple other people like that, that Ben is just not going to be able to overcome.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and disagree with that. I do feel like that Ben is a good enough speechmaker and arguer to be able to articulate at least some semblance of a point or argument to the jury if he makes it to the final three. I don't think he's stupid enough to let this deceit continue for much longer. I feel like if he is worth his salt, like he'll know he needs to get it out in the open. And as you said, Taryn, he needs to know that he needs to at least let it come up in tribal to at least let the jury know about the fact that he was in on the bad stuff, insofar as what happened in the last two episodes. Can we talk really quickly about Mike? Because more than anybody, he was the person who I found myself being most pissed off at throughout this episode. I felt like he was the most petulant bitch I have ever seen. I didn't understand his attitude when Ryan was talking to him. I mean, at least fake it and say, yes, I still want to work with you. Like, I don't know if I can work with you right now, but I'm not going to vote you out right now. And maybe we can do something together, you know, next week. Maybe there's possibilities for us down the road. I'll keep that option open. You know, thank you. If nothing else, if Ryan ends up on the jury, he's going to remember, you know what, when he was on top, he treated me with respect. But that's not what happened, Lita. He was just a petulant jerk to him. Like he was like the little kid in the playground who gets beaten up. And now he's got muscles. He's come back from the summer and he's got muscles and he just wants to beat everybody up. And he's like, now he's the big cheese. And I just felt like it was a really bad look for him. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought this a little bit in the Chrissy and Rourke episode as well, when Rourke got voted out. But I hate the thing on Survivor where it's like, well, you never wanted to talk to me before and now all of a sudden you want to work with me. It's like, yeah, because it could be in both of your best interests. Like, yes. you don't have to trust them for the rest of the game. You don't have to get along with them or like them as a person. But if it's in your mutual best interest to vote together and you're two smart guys like Ryan and Mike, or like two smart girls like Chrissy and Rourke, then you can both see that and know that you don't have to work together for even more than one vote. But you can't just be like, well, you never wanted to work with me before, so now I never want to work with you again because you're fake and mean. Like, it's just the numbers don't see character. They're just numbers. So if you need to use them, then that's fine. Don't just go and dismiss that person, because you might need to, the numbers might change again and you might need to work with them again down the line. So it really bothered me. And when he was left back from reward and he was just like, oh, now I have to spend the day with Chrissy, JP and Ryan, who are a great three people to get to spend the day with Joe. That is three people who are already a block. All you need to do is get you and Joe on board. And I know that that's not an easy task, but he didn't even try. He just whined and made up an alliance name.
I mean, like, Taryn, he's such a bad player. I mean, he is so flipping bad. I didn't even think it was possible for somebody who's this much of a fan of the show to be this bad of a player. But based on what I saw the previous episode at Tribal Council, which didn't make sense to anybody who was watching it or even anybody who was on the island. People are, his own alliance mate is laughing at him in front of other people. And then going into this episode, we were just like, everything about Mike is controlled by his emotions. You know, and I can identify with that. I'm controlled by my emotions. And I always felt like in a reality game that I would fall prey to them at some point. But you have to understand that he had time to digest this. Like, he knew, okay, we're about to blindside these people, and how should I act to the, you know, dethroned king and queen when they come a-calling? Because you know they're going to come a-calling. And he just didn't play it right at all. And I was just, I was so through with him.
Yeah, I feel like, I do feel like Mike, he's the kind of player where if he is, if things are going well, I think Mike has the ability to play well. I think that if the healers had maintained their majority at the merge, I think Mike could have made a really deep run, maybe even potentially won the game. But the second he loses control, the second he's in trouble, he's lost control, he doesn't have the numbers anymore, he's now having to scramble, I think that's when he goes completely berserk. And I think that's what we've been seeing. Maybe a little bit like, this is kind of a deep cut for a Survivor podcast, but Big Brother Canada, Joel, who played pretty well for the most part, and then out of nowhere, just completely imploded toward the end. It's very much reminiscent of that, where it's just like Mike, he just can't seem to do anything right at this point. He's trying to play like the players that he loved watching as a fan when they are down and out, like the Tonys, and maybe even like Hayden convincing Sierra to draw rocks. Like, when you're really down, like those players who are just doing these crazy moves and convincing the votes to go on them and playing idols and like, oh, look at me, look at us, like we're the coconuts, like the coconut bandits or something. He's very much playing up this character that it's just not him. It's not who he is. And I feel like that's where it's really failing, because, you know, people are just looking at it and just being like, I'm good.
And I think the problem is that, well, first of all, for the problem for the players is that you're right, it's not authentic. And the problem for the viewers is that he won't admit that he's done anything wrong ever. Like, when he goes into tribal council, it's like, follow my lead, and then just does nothing. And then he's like, nailed it. Like, it's not relatable. Like, you, if you want to play in your emotions, I'm with you. I would go out on that island and play 100% with my heart. I will be the first to admit that. But I would go to the camera and be like, this is hard. Like, he's just being like, oh, nobody wants to play with me, no one wants to make a move, like blah blah blah. Like, no, it's just not good for anybody to work with you, because you're crazy and you're not good at Survivor, and you think you're really good at Survivor, you're telling us at home that you're really good at Survivor. Oh, it's about to get good. It's so frustrating. Just have some self-awareness. Viewers like self-awareness more than anything, and someone to root for, and he doesn't have it.
Can I ask you really quickly, Lita, who are you rooting for? I'm very curious, because I mentioned that I am fans of like quite a few people, but I'm having like trouble deciding who to root for. Is there anybody in the game who you're like, yeah, I'm really rooting for them, and that if they won the game, I'd be really thrilled with that?
I've been Team Chrissy since day one.
Okay.
And I will be Team Chrissy to the
end. Let's talk about her. I had a feeling you might say that, because here's the thing about Chrissy. I understood the game that she was playing, and I thought it was a really good game, but I listened to these people come off of the show, and they were a little bit critical of her and her social game and her ability to work with other women. And I thought that was a little bit of a sour grapes. I really didn't buy much of that. But like, I mean, even though I said I did agree with her in terms of how the majority alliance was treating her after the blind side, I do feel like watching Chrissy that there are elements to her game, and I don't know that you agree with me on this one, that are a little bit like hard. They're a little bit, you know, like she doesn't have that soft touch to be able to get people. She doesn't have a self-awareness about herself, of how she comes off to people sometimes. Like, wasn't it, I think it was Desi who was like, you know, after the show, she was like, Chrissy still calls me. Like, I don't know if she realizes we're not friends. Like that, that's the kind of person that Chrissy is. And I'm sort of here for that sort of naivete in terms of like not having a great awareness about what her social game is like to other players, but she's still such a hungry player that I find myself rooting for her like whole hog.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that she is playing the best game she could possibly be playing, but I also don't think anyone out there is going without mistakes. I think that the exit interview thing is a bit overblown to me, because I think people are acting like because like three or four women in a row all said the same thing about her not being able to work with women that like it must be true. But these people have had months. It's not like they do the exit interviews right when they step off the island. I'm sure that these women have had conversations with one another and sort of come to this conclusion. So it's not that it's not true. It's just not as like, you know, crazy that they all said the same thing as like people are making it seem. I think that this is probably something that they all like talked about and were like, oh, retrospectively, yeah, that could be true. Like that might make sense. And
and that makes them feel so much better about the game that they right. play. Because yeah, if Percy is if she's like that, then I don't have to take ownership for the game that I played anymore. All of a right. sudden it's not about me anymore. It's about Chrissy and her inability to work with other women.
Yeah. And so I get that. And if that's why you don't like Chrissy, then like, you know, I get it. Like it's hard to root as a woman for a woman who seemingly does not like other women. I just don't really buy into that. The other thing is that Chrissy is a really, really smart person. I don't think anyone is gonna like argue with that. We've had so many people in production and prop saying she's one of like greatest puzzle makers, whatever. And she's also a super fan. She's been watching forever. Right. So I would not put it past Chrissy, even if she doesn't know the exact statistic, to have the knowledge that men are way more likely to have idols. Just, it's insane. It's like out of 70 something idols or something like that, only 16 have been found by women. Like that's crazy.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's so disproportionate. And why that is a different discussion, whether it's that women are more passive or they play more conservatively because they're afraid they'll be a threat, or they're worse at finding things. I don't know. Like there's so many. I don't want to come off like, oh, it's definitely a society. I don't know. Maybe women
Headline
are bad.
From this podcast, Lita says women are bad at finding things.
I'm just saying I have not done the research. I do not know why women don't find these idols. I imagine it has to do with playing more conservatively. Or the fact that they're focusing on social relationships, which means that they don't need idols as much, which is how Survivor should be played. But I would not put it past her to know that information. So if she's taking a shot at someone, say Jessica in another alliance, I know that it's frustrating that it's been Jessica or Desi or like these random women just because they're like sort of this, not sidekicks, but you know, it's sort of like the second in command to a big threatening male. Like it's not random, and it's not because she doesn't like women. I think that there's a possibility that she knows just like statistically, and I don't think it's fair to ask a woman to play a game for $1 million and then on top of that play a game for $1 million and also consider like the social implications of like not working with women. My position is that if we don't demand it of Ryan, then we can't demand it of Chrissy. And so
yeah,
I have never really sensed the issue. And I think a lot of people that sort of can't put my finger on it thing, for a lot of people, she evokes sort of being the young woman at a workplace and having older women not supporting you because they feel like there's only room for one woman. And that's a very real experience that I know happens. So if it's just like she evokes to you someone that you don't like, then that's totally valid. Like, go ahead, don't root for Chrissy. I just have not bought into sort of the major reasons that people don't like her. So I have never jumped off the Chrissy train. I think she's fantastic.
Can I ask you one more question? Do you think that Chrissy can win the game?
Yeah. I think Chrissy can win the game. I think it is very unlikely that Chrissy wins the game.
Okay. Taryn, I wanted to tell you really quickly that, you know, when we did the Survivor draft, we did it after, what was it, 3 episodes, and we'd gotten to know some people. We were going right into the swap. There were 15 people left, and the first person I took with my pick was Chrissy. And I really thought, oh my God, she's totally winning the game. And now, you know, what is 7 weeks later, I'm like, I don't know, she's winning the game. But I still have hope that she could turn it around. I do feel like she's the kind of woman who would not let her emotions, you know, there's that old cliche about women let their emotions get into play. But I really feel like it's the men in this case who have let their emotions get in the way of everything. Chrissy, on the other hand, I feel like is playing a pretty straightforward game and sort of kind of expected the game to be played that way and was sort of taken. I think she like the whole like not telling her when the plan came together and not wanting to talk to her really after the blindside. I feel like that was a bit of an insult to her, specifically her, because I feel like she is the kind of person who can appreciate a good move that was made. And if you say, oh yeah, we came up with this plan and this is how it happened and blah, 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 she'd be like, you know what, great move. But the fact that they were a little bit petulant about it and they just wouldn't answer her questions, I felt like was a bad look on them. And I wouldn't blame her for being upset with them. I'm glad she bitched to us, you know, the cameras, and not directly to everybody else. So that was good. And I also feel like that in the future, if be like emotional Mike. She's going to be looking at the numbers and going, you know what? I know that, you know, perhaps we didn't talk in the past, but I need you right now. I need you and I need you to make a move. I don't care if you, you know, murdered somebody. I'll get into an alliance with you just for one day if it's what I need in order to make my game better. And I still feel like that she could win the game. I also feel like it'd be really good of her to, I've been waiting for a woman to make this sort of final counsel speech where they just get up there and they basically just let them have it. You know what? If I was a man, you guys wouldn't be asking me these questions. If I was a man, you wouldn't be treating me like this. You know, if I did this, and if I was a man, you'd say, oh, you were so tricky. You played the game so well. You just like Todd in China. But because she's a woman, you're like, oh, she's such a betrayer. She totally, you know, hornswoggled us and, you know, stabbed us in the back. And, you know, we can't reward that kind of behavior. I feel like it's such a double standard. I feel like it would be good if she actually called people out on it and took control of her final tribal council speech, assuming she makes it there. But I can see Lita rolling her eyes. Maybe she disagrees with me.
I would love that. That would be a terrible final tribal council speech. Talk about totally blowing it. I mean, listen, Brent.
All right.
Know if you have ever been in the position of calling a man out for being sexist, they don't like it. It turns
Look, I agree with you that they don't like it, but given the situation of like, you know, she's calling them out on national television and, you know, maybe she can couch it a little bit better, but basically say, look, I played this game balls out. You know, if I was a man, you guys would be begging me to like take the money. So I'm saying, give me the damn money. I played the game great. I feel like if she did something like that and called them out in front of everybody on national television, I feel like it would be very hard for them to go up there and basically prove her right and say, you know what, Christy, we're not going to vote for you. You know, I feel like it would be like sort of a challenge in a way to their manhood. Like, are you man enough to write my name down? Like, I don't know. This is in my fan fiction of what I want to happen.
I'm thinking about the people on the jury. And at what point is JP like, whoa, she has a point and things like that. No,
she doesn't have to worry about JP.
JP and Joe Mina are not reflecting on their internalized misogyny.
JP
in like
is going to
5 minutes before they vote. It's not happening.
Even some of the women on the, who's on the jury right now? Desi's on the jury. Yeah. Okay. She looked gorgeous. Oh my God, she looked gorgeous. Yeah.
These are not people.
I think I'm with Lita here. I feel like the reaction generally is like if you're being called out for something, then you want to prove them wrong by doubling down, by being like, well, no, the premise is not correct. Therefore, I'm going to vote against you and I'm going to tell you the real reasons. You can't understand the real reasons. I'm going to tell the cameras the real reasons and that'll prove you wrong. If anything, by switching their vote because they were called out, it's kind of like capitulating and saying like, you're right. I was sexist and now I'm trying not to be, which is kind of like that's admitting on national TV that you are, that you had a problem.
So let me ask you then, Taryn, since we're talking about her, do you think that Christy can win the game?
I here's the thing. I try not to read into exit interviews too much. I would say if I was just watching the show, I feel like she does still have a shot to win the game. But just the fact that so many people in these exit interviews have felt very comfortable just really going hard against Christy makes me feel like she's probably not the winner. Because usually, especially if you were on the jury, you want to feel good about the person you voted for. You want to feel good about the winner of your season. And like, even if you're not like a super big fan of them, you want to be like, yeah, but they had some redeeming quality. Like I voted for them for a reason, or they got the votes for a reason. So it's hard to see her winning a jury vote. It really is. Just based on the exit interviews. And I mean, there is definitely some stuff in the episodes themselves that's saying like, she's not doing the best jury management in the world here. But I would love to see her win. And I do think that, again, take out the exit interviews. I think she absolutely would still have a shot.
I feel like that there may be a way for her to win with a plurality. Like it's an 8-person jury. Yes. I feel like that if it was like 3-3-2, mm-hmm. There may be a way for her to get it done, which I mean,
4-3-1. Like that's how I see it. I don't buy into the tie. I'm not a tie truther. But that when I say, I think,
what does that mean? Sorry.
People who think that there might be a tie at the final tribal council.
Why do they think that?
Yeah. Well, because go ahead, Lita.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I think people think it for a few reasons, mostly because there's so many contenders right now. But also, I think Probst explained how it worked at last season's finale, which is weird.
Oh, okay.
Just out of nowhere explained how ties worked at the final tribal. Yeah. And then prior to this season, we talked about it during the draft. Probst said, this is the closest final tribal we have ever seen. Like, it's really close.
That's such a spoiler. What is wrong with Probst? I hate that.
Well, we don't know for sure, though. But it'll be interesting.
I think when I say that it's really unlikely that she wins, I think that I see a lot of scenarios where she gets to the end, but it would have to be that she's with that perfect combination of people where the votes are split. I think by no means is she sweeping a jury vote or even close to, or I don't even know if she can get a majority, but that is the one scenario I see that she gets to the end with just the right two people and squeaks through.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's possible. What about Ryan? Because I feel like the fan base was pretty harshly against Ryan. I feel like they've lightened up a little bit, especially now that he's no longer in power. He definitely got like the downfall edit. I did really like his veggie wrap line. I can't even win a veggie wrap on Survivor.
veggie wrap.
That was good.
That was great. I really liked Ryan in these episodes. I felt like that when he was on top or seemingly on top, I felt like he was playing about as well as he could. I mean, I don't, of the people who were at fault, I don't feel like Ryan was one of them. I know I heard some people give him some flack, but I felt like he played pretty well. Like even when Lauren won the reward, he gave a very diplomatic answer. Like, you know, those two guys haven't eaten in a while. And I understood why, you know, she took those players. I felt like he played even better though on the bottom. And after what we saw with Mike, I feel like it's a really good testament to a player about how they play when they're on the bottom. He wasn't angry with anybody. He took that time where, you know, you are on lockdown coming back from tribal council, and he didn't yell at anybody. He said to other people, you know, hey, I'm still willing to work with you. You know, and even when Mike pushed back a little bit, he wasn't offended by it. You know, he let Mike have his say and said, you know, yeah, well, you never wanted me to work with me before. He was like, well, you know, that's true, but the game changes. And so I felt like it was great to see him, and he played his idol. You can say, he played it, he wasted his idol. No. That's what the idol's there for, is when you're in danger, you need to play it. He would look like an absolute idiot if he didn't play his idol. And I think most people acknowledge that. So I felt like even though he lost power, it was a really good two episodes for him.
Do we think that Ryan still has a shot to weasel his way back into the end game? Lita, I know you were never a huge fan of Ryan. What do you think?
I'm not accepting a reality in which Ryan is a winner candidate, actually. So I reject the question. He came off fine in these last couple episodes for Ryan, whatever. He's playing a fine enough game. I think that it's got to be, even as in the final four, I think it's got to be either Ryan or Chrissy. I don't think both of them are making it there. I think Chrissy's more likely just because people would rather sit next to her in final three than Ryan, I'd imagine. And I don't see Ryan winning any challenges to get himself there. So, I think that it's possible if they decide Chrissy is a bigger threat than Ryan at a certain point in these next couple episodes before we get to the four, then it's possible he makes it there. I don't really see the path to the end for him. I'm not a fan.
I will say really quickly, I actually am a fan of Ryan, and I do think that there's a way that he can win the game, and I do think he's a viable winner candidate at this point. The one thing I didn't really like, though, Taryn, this is my one quibble with Ryan. Boy, he played it badly with Devin. I mean, not only the whole thing with the lie and telling Devin that, you know, you're the only person I'm telling about the idol, and then seemingly telling Ben out of nowhere, and I know he said he wanted to tell Ben to build trust, and maybe he felt like he needed to do that, but he should have let Devin in on the fact, hey, I'm telling him about this. We need to keep him. We need to keep him close. But instead, he started playing too much of an individual game. And then after the blind side happens and they go down to the beach the next day and talk about it, good. He says, I'm not mad. I understood why you made the move. Great. But then he tries to play word games, Lita. He tries to play word games with Devin and say, you know, when he says, why did you do that? And Devin says, well, because, you know, you told me I was the only person who knew about the idol. And then you told Ben, he started to say like, Well, no, I said I found it or something. Like he started. I don't can't remember exactly.
It's like at the time he was. Yeah. The only, but it's like if you had the intention of telling him, then it's still a lie.
Yeah, it was very much a word game kind of thing where it was like, you know, well, I didn't say that exactly. I mean, like he could not have played that worse. So I hated that look on him, Taryn.
Well, it is funny because I saw this pointed out on the Survivor subreddit, actually, that like if you look at this, the actual scene, what Ryan is saying is correct. Like he never really told Devin, I'm only telling you, you're the only one that knows. He just said something that sounded like that. And Devin interpreted it the way that he did.
Well, he said you're the only one that knows, which at the time was true.
Well, I think it was some, it was like I don't remember exactly what, but the point is that
does that matter?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think he really did mean it in the way that he was trying to describe it. But you are completely correct in that, like, that doesn't matter for Devin anymore. Like, especially now that Devin has actively stabbed you in the back. Again, think about like the way that people justify things to themselves. Devin is never going to accept that that was a misunderstanding. Yes. Not after he just stabbed you in the back and is now in a great position. Like, he's going to do whatever he needs to do to justify, like, no, that what I did was correct. And now I'm in a good spot. I can't go back on it. And I don't want to feel bad that I like did it because of a misinterpretation. Like you're either lying to me or it doesn't, I'm just not going to think about it. Like I understand the impulse from Ryan as well to be like, no, that wasn't what I meant. No, like, but you have to just accept it and be like, look, I'm sorry. I messed up. It's my fault. Just let me know how I can help you because, you know, I'm here for you. I feel bad for what I did. Make it seem like Devin now has you in his pocket because you just feel so bad. You feel so bad about what you did. You're so out of the game. Just like maybe try to get Devin to protect you over the other people that are up on the block, like Mike and Chrissy. And then at the very worst, you like Devin or Chrissy and Mike go ahead of you. Or maybe Devin gets in trouble for sticking his neck out too much, trying to protect you. And then maybe he's in trouble and then maybe you can sneak in there. Like, I feel like that's the move. But obviously, it's got to be so hard when you're like, that wasn't what I meant. It's like you're already feeling bad because you just got stabbed in the back and you're hungry. Like there's a lot of factors, but I really feel like that was the move there.
I feel like he really did a bad job, Lita. He could have, like, I feel like the thing that would have worked is he should have just totally fallen on his sword in front of Devin and been like, you know what, dude, I'm so sorry. I got caught up in the game. I played it so badly. You are my number one. Please, you know, believe me. Like turn on the waterworks a little bit. You know what I mean? And just make him feel really, really bad. Show them how badly you feel. And maybe, you know, you can bring it back to your side. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of Ryan's problems is that he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder from the way that he looks and his general everything about him that makes him feel like he's not very, you know, manly or tough or in charge or has a lot of power or whatever. And so I think because of that insecurity, he refuses to be like obsequious to Devin because it just reinforces what he thinks everybody already thinks of him when really it's just better gameplay. But I don't think he wants to be like the, you know, the little nerd who's acting small and, you know, sort of bending to the alpha male. I think that he's just like self-conscious of that. And I think my problem with seeing Devin winning is that I can't tell if the people out there like him or not.
You like Devin or Ryan?
Ryan. Okay. I can't tell if people like him because I think we've seen like, you know, he had that bond with Devin at the beginning that demonstrated that he was social and likable. But then also we've seen people complain about him being annoying or whatever, which like granted in the last episode is coming from Mike, which, you know, stones and glass houses or whatever. But yeah, I think that it's just hard for me to see if he's someone who can get up at the end and have people feel good about him winning, because I just don't know if he's like fun out there or if he's like, if he's just all labored metaphors all the time. And like, this isn't going to sound like deep strategic analysis, but I think he's got a classic case of just like one of those faces. And I don't know if people are going to want to like vote for this guy who's like, you know, so overcompensating for his appearance with like his confidence and his, you know, his intelligence or whatever. I just don't know how much it's coming out on the island. Like how he's different on the island than he is in confessional. It's really hard for me to tell.
Yeah, my interpretation of Ryan is that people do seem to really like him. It seems like he's made a lot of really genuine connections with people, like with Allie, with Devin, with Chrissy, and I think maybe Ben is the one that he failed at. But maybe even then, he had a good relationship with Ben potentially, but Ben just saw him as dangerous. And I think the problem that Ryan faces, and I think I talked about this a little bit earlier in the season as well, is that I feel like he the role that he plays is one that's very prone to making people feel very upset at him. Like you were like my little brother and like we had such a genuine bond, but you were playing me the whole time. That makes me pissed. And I think that's what happened with Devin. Devin was like, you're my little brother. You're not supposed to get one over on me. That's not how this relationship works. Like I'm the older brother. You're not supposed to be better than me. You're not supposed to be betraying me. And I feel like that could have hurt Ryan if he had made it to the end. And I feel like it hurt Ryan in the game. And I feel like Devin is kind of the opposite. Devin is kind of like the older brother archetype, where like Devin is making a lot of seemingly very good and genuine connections with people. And when Devin betrays them, they're hurt, but they feel like the power structure was there anyway. Devin was higher up on the social status ladder than me anyway. So the fact that he betrayed me is like, wow, well, you know, it hurts, but I'm not like, you little shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's why Devin could win votes in the end, because he's just a little more respected in general. But like you see when Allie gets betrayed by Ryan, it's like that little And when Devin finds out that Ryan was lying to him, like, oh man, like I can't believe that little guy. And I feel like that really comes into play.
Yeah, I'm just like, where are Jessica and Cole and Desi and, you know, these people that seemingly have no relationship with him? Like, where are they on Ryan? I just have no idea. And it's going to come down to like, how fun was he to live with for the short time that they were together? Or wait, is Jessica even on the jury? No,
she's not on the jury.
I keep thinking because she's on the merch. But, you know, where are Cole and Desi on him? And I think that it's people like that, that you just need to like, be fun and nice and make people feel good about voting for you. And I just don't know where he is.
I feel like Mike doesn't like Ryan because Mike feels like Ryan is his character. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he feels like Mike's like, I'm the one who's like the super fan who is, you know, the guy who's a fish out of water, who's trying to, you know, somehow make his way to the end against all odds, you know, that kind of character. And he looks at Ryan as a little bit like that. And I feel like that he doesn't like him because of that.
Yeah, I would agree. Actually, I feel like especially like when Mike was on the outs, I think Mike probably felt like oh, that guy is in my role. Right. He's doing what I was going to be doing if I didn't lose the numbers at the merge. And then when the Alliance of Four flipped things and Mike thought that he was in a good Final Five alliance, and now Ryan was on the outs, he was like, haha, tables have turned. Now I'm in your spot, dude. You're not getting back in. I got it now. And I think he quickly found out at that tribal that actually that wasn't the case either. They're both on the outs. So I do feel like that's probably where the Mike Ryan relationship came in. But I agree, Lita. I really have no idea how Cole or any of those, like Desi, like how did they view Ryan? I have no idea. We know how they kind of like, they know how they viewed Ben, but we don't know how they saw Ryan. Did Ryan even really communicate with them? I mean, according to Mike, who has a reason to dislike Ryan in terms of what we just talked about, he was like, oh, Ryan didn't give me any attention. When Ryan didn't have a strategic reason to bond with somebody, did he do it anyway? And that's something that we don't really know. I'd be interested to find out. But I think that's maybe one of the reasons why we might not see him in the end. Like, we just don't know how those relationships work out.
I was going to say really quickly that, you know, the reason I think that he's a viable winner candidate is because of the fact that people really don't talk about him very much in their exit interviews. And I feel like that's somewhat of a telltale sign of telltale. I like telltale better. We'll do hashtag telltale. Of someone who's at the end when they just don't want to give anything up on somebody. So I feel like that there is a chance that Ryan could be the winner of the season, and I'm going to hold on to that because he's also on my team along with Chrissy.
I guess I'm going to have to start reading exit interviews more closely. I had just got into like edit reading on the actual show, and now I have to read the edit on Exit Interviews.
Well, you never know. I mean, he could just be another juror, so, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I didn't even think
I mean, I try not to read into it too much. I do my best to not, like, read into things as much as possible, but it's like when there are big, like, news stories, like, you know, everyone is trash-talking Chrissy, it's like, well, can't help but sort of realize what's going on there.
Also, the one thing that came out of the Exit Interviews that I just, like, it was like I had a big shining light on it when I read it was from Joe, because I was talking to my mom about the fact that I can't believe they're actually letting Ben, you know, basically sleeping with the enemy on the other side, you know, talking with them, getting in good with them, you know, basically having a plan B if he ever needs it. I thought that was a terrible move by them to let him do that. And then Joe's Exit Interview was basically all about that. It was Joe's was like, you know, basically I overestimated Lauren and Ashley and Devin because I really thought that they were smarter than this. Then why would you let a guy with those kind of ties, you know, be able to play double agent? Why in the world would you let him do that? I felt like Joe in his own way is trying to tell us, hello, McFly, they made a terrible move in getting rid of me this episode instead of Ben, and they're going to pay for it in the next episode. That's what I feel like is going to happen.
I mean, or Joe is like, I got voted out because everyone is dumber than I thought.
Well,
like,
there's that too.
Okay, great.
Well, that was basically what Jeremy said, and then he came back to an All-Star season and won it, so I don't know.
Don't put that into the universe. Don't put Joe coming back into the universe. Thank you.
I don't know. He was okay. I didn't mind him as much as I thought I was going to. I'll just say that.
It's okay. He's gone. I don't need to talk about him.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I feel like he kind of fizzled out. Like, there wasn't really a whole, like, there wasn't a big Joe scramble. And I think that's largely due to Devin's plan to make him feel very comfortable, where, like, there was no, like, what you'd usually see from Joe on his way out the door is, like, a mad scramble, a bag of tricks, you know, going crazy, making people mad at him. But instead, we got, like, just overconfident Joe, then get backstabbed, and there you go.
And can we also, I'll throw shade on Joe for his freaking Exit Interview, him trying to tell people and Rob, oh yeah, I knew it was coming, like I was the sure I was getting voted out, bitch, please, like when did you ever tell us during this whole episode that there was a possibility that you were actually going to get voted out? Like, when did that happen?
He's very insecure about it. Like,
oh my God, he is.
I've had him muted on Twitter since first episode, so I don't see this, but apparently he tweeted stuff like in preparation for the boot that made it pretty obvious that he was like getting ahead of the story. And it's just like, you just gotta fade gracefully, you guys, like, accept that you got played. It comes off very badly when after the episode airs, or like even after just like it's filmed, when you're like very defensive about your game, it doesn't play well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not often that I watch an episode of Survivor. Like, it happens pretty often on Big Brother, but it's not often on Survivor that I watch an episode and I'm like, wow, those guys are getting snowed so hard. And that's how I felt when I was watching Joe and Mike. I was just like, oh my God, these guys, they're really getting it. And you know what? I liked Joe. I like him as a character. I like him on Twitter. I find him amusing.
Lita, I hear you on the Joe annoyance, but I would rather have a Joe than a JP. You know, I was hungry for the game. And, you know, it's so funny because the one time that Joe really took his foot off the gas and basically acquiesced to somebody else's, you know, view of, you know, who we should get out, and Ben was the one time he got voted out, because he tried to say that, you know, it was a give and take about who we were going to vote for. But I don't really remember it that way, Taryn. Like, to me, they told him to vote for Ben and he was like, okay, I'm good with that. You know, I mean, like, there was no give and take. He got his marching orders. That's why I was laughing at him and Mike trying to, you know, make it seem like they had such a great alliance when they were just being used and they couldn't. I guess that's a really hard thing to face in Survivor and in life, when you're effectively being used by somebody else and you might be onto it. But in order to face the fact that you're being used, you have to also face the music that you've been had, and nobody really wants to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's the kind of thing where it's like, especially for someone who like operates on such a like a like he's constantly thinking, he's a very paranoid kind of person that Joe is. Like, I'm sure that he was thinking in the back of his mind, like I could be getting played here. Like this could all be a ruse. I'm sure he was thinking that. But the problem is that like just because you thought that doesn't mean that like after it happens you get to say like I called it, I knew it.
Right.
Like no, yes. If you knew it. You would have done something about it first. Yeah. Like that's what knowing means. Like foreseeing a possible outcome is very different than knowing something was going to happen. And I feel like that's a distinction that many players do not care for.
Do we think that they made a bad play here? I'm talking specifically about Mike and Joe. I'm thinking that there was a way for them to try to get control of the game again. And I know that they technically thought they had control of the game, but what they had was being a twosome in a three, in a five person alliance, which isn't a great spot to be in. I felt like instead what they should have done here is join with Chrissy and Ryan to make a foursome. If they're believing what Lauren and them are telling them, then those three people will vote for Ben. Ben will vote for whoever the hell. Us four will vote for, you know, Ashley or Devin, for heaven's sake, and they could have gotten him out of the game. They could have gotten Lauren out of the game and her extra vote out of the game. And they would be in an alliance with two other people, two goats, effectively. Well, maybe Ryan's not a goat, but Chrissy certainly is at this point, at least in their view of the game. Mm-hmm. She's not a jury threat, I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would have been the play for them here, Taryn, was to go to the two of them, say, you know what? We're each a pair. We need each other. They could do like a Suri triple play thing and make it like 4-3-1 if they're believing what is really happening in that Ben is getting voted out. But they didn't accomplish that. I feel like there was a play for them here and they were stupid not to take it. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure they could have done 4-3-1 because all four people voted Joe, right?
Yes, they did, but they didn't know that though. They didn't know what was happening though.
I do think you're onto something though. I think that that if they're able to suss out that Ben is with those other people, then they're definitely able to go to that pair. And even if they don't, even if they're like Ben may or may not be on your side, but right. Like let's jump to this pair.
Let's proactively do something. Yes,
especially because Ryan has an idol. Chrissy has immunity. Of course they're willing to go to rocks.
Like yeah.
They would, if they have to go to rocks, of course Ryan and Chrissy are willing to do it, which means that there's only one person vulnerable of those four people and yes. All of the rest of the other four are vulnerable. It's almost definitely going to go your side, the which means you've like, taken over the game with four people.
Yes, the thing I didn't like, Lita, was the fact that I like this proposed plan that of course they can't do now, or maybe they can do some semblance of it, but they could have done it at the time with Joe because it's making their own bed. And the thing that they were in before was their bed was made for them. They were, you know, they were out there. Two votes, no alliance. Lauren, Ashley, and Devin come to them and say, we're going to do this. We need you guys. You're in with our five. Okay. But that was a bed that they got into. They didn't have any play in making that bed. If they then say, you know what? We don't need these guys anymore. We're going to jump back over here with Chrissy and Ryan. Our four votes can carry the day. And now it's a bed of your own making. You really do have equal footing in this alliance. And of course, these people, you can trust them because they need you. You don't need to trust these other people anymore, but I know it's 2020 and you know, we know what happened after the fact, but I really do feel like I hold Joe more accountable than anything because he called himself such a player in the game. And I felt like there was a way to save himself here if he figured it out.
Yeah, no, this is what I'm saying is that Mike is a really emotional player who is more interested in working with people who haven't hurt his feelings than people yes. who could actually help his game. So he didn't even try. And I don't think that Joe is a big, despite what he may say, I don't think he's a big scenario runner. He has proven to not be someone to like play very creatively. I don't think that he's necessarily the most strategically oriented person considering that Cole had to literally point out the idol. Like, I don't think he's the best problem solver. So I think that this was just not the duo to get that accomplished, but I think it's 100% their fault. I think that the best plan is to not need an idol, but they think the best thing is to protect ourselves with idols. But it's like, no, you shouldn't need idols. Your first strategic play should be making allies, and they just aren't interested in that.
Yeah, the Tanner, the more I think about this, I really think that, you know, not to give myself a pat on the back, but I like what you said about the fact that I forgot that Ryan had an idol at the time and Chrissy had immunity. So, you know, whoever is voted for, like you don't even need to know that they're voting for you. I mean, if they're not lying to you, then you're going to carry the day 4-3-1. If they are lying to you and they're all going to vote as a block against you, then it's going to go 4-4. But whoever they vote for is going to be immune in a rock jaw. Ryan's going to play his idol. Chrissy's already immune. That means that one out of what, four people are vulnerable from your side. And the rest of the people have to all put their hand in a bag. So,
well, I mean, three, because Ben has his idol by this point, but.
Right. Well, but he wouldn't have played it though. Yeah. He's not going to play it though. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like that. I feel like, gosh, but you know what? I've had this episode to think about for, you know, 4 days. And I just, like, as the podcast has been happening, I thought of this idea. But then again, they are playing the game like 24 hours a day. They really should have thought of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, that's kind of what makes Devin's plan so effective, is that it basically cut off any possibility of this happening, because Joe and Mike felt so comfortable with that four. Because if they know that Ben is with the other side, it basically becomes a no-brainer that they should do this. But they have to figure that out. It adds another layer of confiscation. Like, they can't see what's happening, and because of that, they're not even able to see that this is a viable plan for them. I still blame them for not being able to see through it, but I do think it adds to, like, again, like, what was so fun for me to watch that plan come into effect, that it really just cut them off at the knees. They couldn't even think about alternatives because they were made so comfortable. Whereas they would have been much more likely to see this as a possibility if they had seen all the pieces where they actually laid.
But even so, like, I think that they should see it as a possibility, just because, like, why would they want to be 5-6 in that alliance when they could be potentially 3-4 if this works?
For sure.
They even if they felt completely comfortable with this alliance of four going through with it that night, obviously they aren't going to be in the top on that alliance. So I think regardless, they should have considered that.
I feel like that their defense to this, and not that I'm trying to take their side, would be, you know what? We just wanted to get Ben out of the game. After Ben was out of the game, then we would have, at 7, we would have flipped back to Chrissy and Ryan to take out or at least one of the three of them. And then the game's all shuffled up again. But I understand that. But I like my plan better, even though there is the possibility of a rock draw, because your odds are very, very slim in the rock draw. But if it goes through, then you're just absolutely set. Or the other way, you're depending on things to happen. You can't take control of the game that way. And I feel like that, like, if you take control of the game at 7 and everything gets shuffled up, then you're not in control of the game. You know, I mean, that just means things got shuffled up. But if you take control of the game, like I said, at 4, at 8 here, I feel like there was a play for them to be made. And why wouldn't Chrissy and Ryan want to stick with them in a 4-person alliance? They would have to stick with them for at least a vote or two. And by then you're at the final 4, final 5.
Yeah, it's really just a situation where it's just like the fact that they didn't know where Ben stood just really made the decision so much harder.
Because I like that more in hindsight. I really do. Yeah. I was critical of it when I first watched the episode. I thought it was a lot of, like, sneakiness for the sake of sneakiness. But in hindsight, I feel like it was a really shrewd move on their part, at least for the alliance's part. I still feel like there may be some a pound of flesh coming Ben's way, and maybe even Devin's way. But for in the here and now, it was a good move.
Yes, for sure. All right. So I feel like the final two people that we haven't talked too much about, Lauren and Ashley. We did mention that Lauren really did take over the game with her move to bring people on side. This 4-person alliance, it's really been dominant. Lito, what are your thoughts on Lauren? Because I feel like the audience has really come to be like, oh, yes, Queen Lauren. And I have to agree. I think that Lauren is doing really well. Although I do think there is a little bit of, like, overestimation now, because like before she was underestimated, and then she made this huge move, and so it's like it came out of nowhere, and everyone's like, oh, she's the best. But I think it's probably a little bit more in the middle somewhere, where, like, it was a very good move, but it may be being a bit overstated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in, but I also think that the almost, like, uniform hype for Lauren, at least on my Twitter timeline, is just like, we don't really have too many other people to latch on to as, like, super exciting winners. So Lauren would be great. I do think that she may have blown up her spot a little bit too much in these episodes, where she has a great asset, which was shown when she picked the people for the rewards, when Probst was like, Ryan, what do you read into those choices? And Ryan genuinely, I think, was like, oh, well, you know, just Devin needs more food and Ashley hasn't been on a reward in a while or whatever. So a great asset in Survivor is to be able to make strategic moves without people noticing that they're strategic moves, without people thinking that. So for her to go with these three people and just lay everything on the table, tell them about this advantage she has, and be the ringleader of this brand new alliance, I think it could be dangerous. Luckily, Devin has enough of an ego that he's always going to think he's in charge and he's not going to see Lauren as a threat. So she still is able to not take the heat too much for that alliance, and Ben too, having a very strong personality. But I think outing herself as a really strategic player could hurt her a little bit down the road, just because she has sort of given up this just like, oh, I'm just like a mom and I'm a fisherwoman and I'm just, you know, out here for the adventure or whatever. Like, she's totally given that up.
Well, I do think what helps her is that she's still in a field of complete sharks in terms of strategic, threats. Like Ryan, Chrissy, Devin, like, these are all people who I think people still see as much more threatening than Lauren. And I will say, I think Lauren is probably the best player out there right now. Just in terms of, like, she's that perfect middle ground of strategic enough to recognize that these are the people willing to flip over. She's able to make the move successfully and then sit back and just kind of let Devin take charge, do his crazy plans, do all the work for you. I think she's one of the biggest contenders to win the game. It's just a matter of, like, is she able to make that move one more time? Because she probably does have to make one more big move like that in terms of maneuvering to the end. I don't think she wants to get there with Devin or Ben. I think those are two tricky people to get to the end with. Ideally for her, I think she'd get there with Mike. But I think it's likely that she does get there with some combination of either Ben or Devin. And maybe that's why there's a close vote at the end. Who knows? But I do like what Lauren is doing. And I think that it's a very shrewd move to be able to, like on one hand, maybe she got lucky that Devin had just turned on Ryan. And if that hadn't happened, he would have ran right back to Ryan and outed her. And she would have been in deep trouble. But on the other hand, maybe she saw it. Maybe she was able to recognize. Maybe Ben came to her and said, no, seriously, I think Devin is on board for this. And that's why she knew to grab Devin as well. But either way, I just think that it was a very good move. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing what she can do moving forward in the game. I'm just not completely ready to, like, place the crown on her and say that, like, Queen Lauren, she's the best at everything.
Well, I'm not going to place the crown on her, but I really did like this play. I will disagree with Lita a little bit in that I feel like that I know that there is a risk in essentially outing herself as a strategist. But on the other hand, given the field of sharks that she's in, I feel like that if she didn't do that, she's not winning at the end anyway. Like, I feel like she needs to let them know, hey, yeah, I'm playing the game just like you guys are, and I'm playing really, really hard. Like, I feel like that will earn her some points at the end. And on balance, the idea is to win the game, not just get to the end. So if she's trying to win the game, I feel like that's something that people are going to take into account. Like, wow, she was playing hard all the time. The other thing that I just have to give her props for is, I'm sorry, she literally carried that entire bag up from the beach by herself
and then pushed it through with her boobs.
Yes, I mean, she was everything, Taryn. So that's why, like, all of Twitter was just like, yes, queen, because she was just giving us everything that we wanted on Survivor. And while you've got these pipsqueaks like, you know, Ryan and Mike, or like, you know, literally can't pick up two blocks together, she's got the whole bag and she's carrying it up by herself. So and then the whole boob thing was just, you know, who does that on Survivor? Come on. You know? I thought it was great.
I may have fast forwarded a little bit through the challenges, so maybe that's why I missed that.
Oh my god! She literally, like, put the blocks up, and rather than push with her hands, because, like, she just literally, like, took her boobs and went, whoosh, you know, like, I know you can't do it if you're listening to an audio podcast, but her boobs are just out to here, and she just went, whoosh, and she did that like 20 times.
I tweeted that Lauren has more muscles in her boobs than I do in my whole body.
God, yeah, I just wonder.
Lita, can I have you bounce out and reconnect your microphone? You're a little robot-y. Yes. But anyway, Ashley is another person I wanted to mention before.
We can talk about her. What do you want to talk about? Right.
Isn't she the worst? She's always bringing this stuff up. Ashley, I feel like Ashley really came into a spotlight here. She really stepped up her game. And I think that like she did it in a, again, very similar to Lauren in a way, actually, where it's like lying low for a long time, never really seen as too much of a threat, and then really kicked it into gear. The problem I think Ashley faces here is that I think Lauren is going to get the credit for forming the four-person alliance. And even though Ashley is now playing a more engaged game, if she makes it to the end, she doesn't have a whole lot to point to in terms of like, what was your move? What did you do to get here? The best she can do right now is say, I came together with that four-person alliance. But if she's sitting there with two other people from that alliance, it's going to be hard to win over that. And I think her move was take out Ben. I think that's where she can get together with Lauren and say, look, no, that was my move. Like, I came up with that move, or Lauren and I came up with that move. Like, that was something that Ben wasn't a part of, obviously, something that I pitched to Devin. I convinced Devin to do it. Like, that was where she could have really made a stand. I don't think it was the right move for that alliance necessarily. I think it is a little bit risky to leave Joe and Mike in the game, where, as Brent, you mentioned, maybe their plan was flip back over and turn on them. But I think that for Ashley, she probably wouldn't have been their first target. I think that you have to play big if you're in Ashley's spot, where I think she recognizes that a lot of people do view her as the goat right now. She has to do something to combat that image. And I think that she still needs to do something. If she just coasts to the end right now, I don't think she has a great shot at winning. And I think that's probably her likely outcome right now. I think she's probably in the final three there, unless she's like a comp beast that they take out at the final four or something. It's hard to see like where she gets the respect to win the game.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I mean, like, I can certainly see her getting 3 votes out of 8, and that may be enough to carry the day. So, I mean, like, who knows? I will say that I think the problem was that she couldn't get buy-in from Devin. I feel like that Devin, maybe Devin doesn't want to take out Ben here because he's like, you know what? I need to keep Ben in the game a little longer. If Devin does have as big as an ego as Lita contends he does, and I would probably agree with that, then he's probably worried about the fact that they're going to get rid of him if he becomes like the biggest bull in the China shop. So like he wants to keep Ben in the game a little bit longer so that if ever anything starts to happen in the game, people are looking at getting, you know, the Marine out of the game and not getting Devin out of the game. So I feel like that's probably why she couldn't get buy-in from Devin. Either that, or he just didn't want to make a move at this point after having just made a move in the last episode. But I actually dismiss that. I feel like he would have been willing to make the move. I just feel like that he didn't want to because of the reasons that I stated. And without Devin, she couldn't pull the move off.
Can I just say, I liked how Devin responded to Ashley pitching him that idea, because I immediately felt like he didn't want to do it. But like the way that he responded was like, oh, that's a crazy move. That would be so awesome. Like he was just like really like stalling, like, how do I make an argument against this? Meanwhile, I'm just acting shocked. Like, oh, this is, wow, I can't believe you thought of this. This is such a great idea. Like, how did you come up with such a crazy, mind blowing, big, crazy move? But now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like that was the thought process. And I really like, I feel like, it was well done, because if she pitches the idea to him and he's immediately like, I don't know about this, then she feels like she's not being heard. But the way that he did it was like, he accepted the idea, like, oh, that's crazy. And then what he probably did, again, this is speculation because we don't know why the vote didn't go through, but I think we could assume it was probably Devin. He probably then came up with like, well, you know, now that we're past the excitement phase, I'm starting to look at it, and maybe we want to keep him just one more round, something like that. So I did like that.
Yeah, and it's great because then when he does want to get Ben out, presumably next week or the week after, he can go to Ashley and be like, okay, your idea that you had, like, we're going to do that, your idea, which is great because Ashley already is not cognizant enough of her maybe goat status, because like she had a confessional that was like, I feel like it's my game to lose at this point, which hopefully was taken out of context at some point. Maybe she was talking about the challenge designed for a surfer. I don't know. But like that is a crazy thing for her to say about her position in the game. And it makes me feel like she is not very aware of her position in the game. So if Devin can go to her next week and be like, yeah, your idea that we're going to do, then she's like, great, big move on my resume. That's mine, which obviously at the end, Devin can take credit for it if he's there, or someone else can take credit for it, or Devin can go back to Ponderosa and say, no, that was my move. So I think it totally solidifies her status as someone that can sort of be dragged to the end. I do think that there is room for Ashley to still make moves that can combat that, but getting out Ben is not going to be that move for her. No one's going to attribute it to her.
Do you think that Ashley can win the game, Lita?
I mean, I don't see it, but there is enough time, I think, and enough maneuverability right now. And she hasn't been so bad. She hasn't not been doing anything. You know, she's part of this alliance of four and she knows when to be in the majority. But I think she would have to really pull something off. But I don't think anyone is drawing dead right now. Ashley's the most drawing dead. And that's why the final seven is so exciting. But I still don't think that she's completely drawing dead.
I also agree with that. I don't think she's drawing dead. I think she could still be the winner of the season, sort of like a Michelle Fitzgerald who just kind of comes alive at the end and you don't really see it coming. And everybody else in the games is not drawing dead. I mean, I feel like I could see, I actually like wrote down all the people still left in the game and they're all really fun characters. And I feel like they all could win the game. So, and there's nothing to my knowledge that's been spoiled about this season, about who the winner is, unlike last season or whatever. Anyway, the cast has done a good job of keeping it under their hat. I'll just say that. So, I can't wait to find out what happens. This is going to be so good, Taryn. And we still have Lauren's extra vote to contend with. And apparently there's no time limit on when she can use that. She could use it at the final four if she wanted to. So
I hope she uses it as an extra jury vote. That would be fun.
That would be hilarious, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I see Lauren as a top contender to win. I see Ben as a top contender to win. I don't see it as much as most people do, but I know a lot of people see Devin as a top contender to win. I think Ashley and Mike are probably not winners at this point, but I wouldn't completely count Ashley out. She's had a steady presence. She kind of disappeared around the merge. That's where I'd really like dock her points in terms of edit stuff. But I still think she's got a shot in there. And then Chrissy and Ryan have been front runners for a while until this downfall double episode, but they're not out of the game yet. They could easily make a comeback. And then all of a sudden this whole four person alliance, like the rise of the underdogs, could be easily just swept down in the next episode for all we know. And it's really all about the redemption arc for Ryan or Chrissy. So this season could still go a whole bunch of different ways as far as I'm concerned. And again, that's why I'm so excited about it, because they all have different stories. They all have different motivations. They all have different strategies, and I'm really excited to see where this all heads. I think that's about all we've got for you. Do you guys have anything else you want to bring up?
I'm interested to see if they put another immunity idol back into the game. Obviously Ryan played his at the end of the second episode, and usually when immunity idols played, or hidden immunity idol rather, they will hide another one. I'm interested to see after Suri Armageddon that happened last season, whether or not another idol is placed back into the game. Obviously Ben still has one at this point, but he's the only person that has it, and Lauren has her advantage. So I'm very interested to see where things go. I'm basically want to see who takes control of the game, and can Ben make it to the end? And it's so funny because I don't know that there's a way for him to make it to the end, but the hilarious part is that even if he does make it to the end, as we've already talked about, he's not a slam dunk to win the game. So I'm interested to see how that works out.
I just, as a closing thought, want to say that even though I have had a lot of lukewarm feelings about this season, just not being the most exciting up until this point, I love a season where everyone is playing and there is not the ugliness that you get, which I think the kind of ugliness that you see in like Worlds Apart with like actual like personal attacks and that kind of thing, that is my least favorite kind of television. That is, I don't like watching Survivor or Big Brother, which is way more common in Big Brother, but I just don't like watching it. So I have been like not, white knuckling it through many scenes in this season, which is great. And I think that comes from casting a bunch of people who really love the game and can take things within the context of the game and don't need to yell at people and tell them that they don't have a soul when they lie about something. Like, I think there is a way to play the game very hard and very seriously without being legitimately mean and hard to watch. And I think almost everyone is coming off of this season looking really great and hopefully not having a ton of, hate on Twitter or anything like that, because I think everybody has been a really good sport. And so cast more fans. That's my takeaway. And so I'm very happy that that has been the case this season.
All right. Well, I do have a couple of quick corrections that were made in the chat. So I'm making them here, so you don't have to make them in the comments.
I'm sure I said something, didn't I? What?
The order, I think they're both yours, actually. The order in which the reward people were picked was Devin, Ben, and then Ashley. And then Lauren apparently said in one of her secret confessionals that her extra vote limit is at the final six. That's according to Alex Rubino in the chat. So if they're wrong, then blame them and not us.
Well, was that a secret scene that happened? I'm sure I would have heard that.
Yes, according to Alex.
Secret scene. Okay, cool. Well, I didn't watch all of the secret scenes, so that's interesting. Well, you know what that tells me? That tells me that it happens before then. Like because otherwise they would have said something about it. Like, it's only good until the final six. Like, she's not going to be there in the final... Lauren's not going to be in the game at the final five with... having not played the advantage is what I'm trying to say. So either she gets voted out or she's going to play it in the next two votes. So that's what's going to happen.
All right. So thank you everyone for joining us on this LFC Roundtable Survivor podcast. Make sure you check out some of the other stuff we've got going on. Of course, Rob has a ton of great coverage for Survivor, as well as all of the other side podcasts that go around. You can also check out The Taran Show. I will be releasing the next one on Tuesday morning. I talked with Josh Martinez, winner of Big Brother 19.
Yay! My bestie.
Yes.
Also my bestie.
So very excited for that one to come out. Alex also is offering to tweet us the link to Lauren's secret scene. That would be great.
Oh, cool. Excellent. I was going to say really quickly, also, Lita, you're going to be guesting on one show, I hear.
Yes, I will be on the B&B this week with Mike and Liana, which is really exciting. And I also write weekly Survivor recaps. If you like what I have to say here, it's a lot more long-winded and probably a little bit meaner over on myentertainmentworld.ca. So definitely check that out. Also, Dancing with the Stars finale podcast just dropped today. So very fun season. So definitely check that out.
Very cool. I was going to tell everybody, make sure you check out the B&B with Lita, because she's going to, if you're a fan of Lita from when she read me on the RuPaul's Drag Race podcast, she is going to be reading the house down. Both Mike and Liana are going to be the victims of her reading. So make sure you tune in for that.
Thanks, friends.
Yes. Yes.
Mike was also on the most recent episode of The Taran Show.
Yes.
We are also, hopefully, the LFC and I are going to be doing an off-season Big Brother podcast, hopefully in the next coming days. If you have any ideas for what you want us to do in terms of rankings or, Frankensteins or whatever you want us to talk about.
I need a ranking podcast, so give me your suggestions. I already suggested a couple to Taran. He didn't like them or wants to do them later. So
I think they're great. I just feel they're more appropriate later on.
Yeah. Well, he hated them. Okay, so please send us your suggestions, and it'll be a lot of fun. We'll do it.
Yes. And then, of course, also, I'm very close to setting up a game that's called Secret Hitler. We've been playing it. I've been playing it with Brent and Lita and a bunch of other people. I've got this nice little setup for it. I'm basically ready to go. Going to start inviting some Big Brother players, Survivor players. It's like a social strategy game. If you have any interest in watching a bunch of reality stars yelling at each other, calling each other fascist and trying to determine who's lying, make sure you check that out. It'll be streaming on my Twitch channel and my YouTube channel, which you can find at my Twitter, at Armstrong Taran. And yeah, basically just search my name in any of those things and you'll be able to find it. I'm sure I'll tweet out links as well if you're interested in that at all. You can find Lita at Lita Tweeted and Brent at One Lucky Gay. And then, of course, you can also follow Lita on Instagram at Lita Grammed. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think that's it. Make sure you subscribe to this feed. This is on the Reality TV Rehap-Ups feed. You'll be able to find that off-season Big Brother coverage and The Taran Show and Dancing with the Stars and everything else that
American
we do here.
American Ninja Warrior when it comes back.
Yeah,
that's a great Ninja Warrior.
It'll come soon.
Yeah.
Whoa, they're having Teen Ninja Warrior? Is that what you said?
Team.
Team.
Oh, team. I'm sorry.
I think they're calling it something else now, actually.
Ninja versus Ninja.
I was Ninja versus Ninja Warrior. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why.
Maybe it was confused too much.
Taryn, if they don't get $1 million winner on this season of American Ninja Warrior, I'm giving up. Like, I'm tired of being like led. I'm like the girl.
Like, it happened 2 years ago.
Being taken to the prom and not getting any. Like, I mean, like, you need to give me $1 million winner. That's what needs to happen.
All right. Well, Brent is hard to please, but I guess luckily anyone that listens to our American Ninja Warrior podcast is not. Make sure you check that one out.
Oh, thank hashtag. You again. We need a hashtag.
Oh, yes.
I have it. I wrote it down. It has to be this. I will not accept it. If you don't agree with me, Taryn, it has to be hashtag one of those faces. I absolutely love that. When Lita said that, I was like, oh my God, that was so wrong, but yet it's so right. So yeah, that's what it needs to be.
All the Ryan stands are going to come for me.
All right. Well, again, thank you everyone for joining us. For Lita and Brent, hashtag
one of those faces.
One of those faces. I do that every time. I'm really bad at short-term memory, apparently. I'm Taryn Armstrong. Hashtag one of those faces. We will see you next time.